Fine Dining, the search for the most mediocre restaurant in America, is a podcast where comedian Michael Ornelas is traveling the country, eating at all chain restaurants in search of the perfectly average 5.0 out of 10 dining experience, the objective middle threshold of where bad becomes good. Friend of the Doughboys, Marissa Pinson and John Glover were the most recent guests as they reviewed Costco's Food Court. It's a two-part episode that covers everything from discontinued menu items to how many Costco hot dogs they could fit in their mouths. Damn, I wish I was on that episode. I'd crush that. Head over to linktree.com/finediningpodcast, FINEDININGPODCAST, and click B's giveaway to enter a giveaway for an all expenses paid trip to your local Applebee's, the current front runner for the most mediocre restaurant in America at 5.02 out of 10 for you and up to three of your friends. And you could watch or listen to Fine Dining on your platform of choice while you're there. Enter by May 1st, and the winner will be announced on the May 8th episode. Disclaimer, $50 will be provided for transportation along with a $200 Applebee gift card. I love doing those fast read disclaimer things. Go give Fine Dining a listen, the search for the most mediocre restaurant in America.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Mack Weldon, people! What a fantastic underwear company! I'm wearing a pair of Mack Weldon boxer briefs right now, specifically the trunks in size XXL, and it feels like an antimicrobial hug around my genitals. If you're wondering what antimicrobial means, it means they eliminate odor, which, spoiler alert, Uncle Gabrus can use big time. Here's the other thing. For all you fat fucks out there that are listening to my podcast, all my fellow chunky hunkies, listen. They make shit in XXL, and not like European XXL where it doesn't fit you anyway. I'm talking for real XXL. The form-fitting, like, jogger-type sweatpants made from super comfortable material, the XXLs fit Uncle Gabrus, and Uncle Gabrus has got a big old belly, tiny little ass, thick thighs, and a tiny little pecker. So I'm a weird guy to fit clothes in. The underwear, super comfortable. You could wear them 2 days in a row and not be disgusting. I mean, I don't recommend it. I certainly wouldn't do that myself. I'm a gross boy. But the underwear fucking lasts, man. So go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off using promo code MIGHTY. That's right. Go buy some underwear. Go buy some sweats, t-shirts, socks. They got everything. And the promo code is MIGHTY. Order a pair of underwear. If you don't like it, you get to keep it, and they will still refund you. So at least do that for a free pair of underwear. You'll get refunded anyway. Support the podcast, get a free pair of underwear. But I bet you if you wear one pair of Mack Weldon underwear, you're not going to go back to whatever shitty 3-for-10 boxers you've been wearing up until then. And I mean literally shitty. Look at some of your older underwear. Toss it. Do the girl or guy or person, whoever you've been boning, do them a favor and wear clean, fancy drawers. I tell you what, when I throw on my Mack Weldon trunks, Mrs. Gabrus is quite the fan as well. Mack Weldon, promo code MIGHTY. Just do it. Not like Nike, but just do this for me. What's up, shitheads? Welcome back to another episode of High and Mighty. It's me, your host, John Gabrus, the number one fuck boy, the number one fuck boy, the number one fuck boy, Johnny G. What's up, shitheads? All my little fuck boys and girls out there, the number two fuck boys. They're like my little Hulkamaniacs. Guys, we got a great episode of High and Mighty for you today. Enough fucking around. I'm sure you're pumped that there's no ads. Unfortunately, I'm not. Oh, wait, maybe there is an ad. In which case, yes, awesome. I don't know when this episode's coming out, so this all makes no sense. But I'm making no money. I'm doing this for you, you fucking shitheads. Joining me today in the HeadGum Studios are friends, performers, comedians, road dogs, Aryan ideals, and me. I got Brandon Gardner and Neil Casey. Guys, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Nice to be here, John.
I have to warn people. I'm like, in case you don't listen to my podcast, I do a really obnoxious opening.
and then do it in front of my friends who sit there stone-faced going, okay.
I'm oh. smiling.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. Stone smile.
Yeah. I was bemused.
That's I never heard fuckboy as a positive.
It turns out it is definitely not a positive thing. Yeah, Cypher Sounds explained to me on an episode that it's a bad thing.
Yes.
To I should not be so have so much ownership over.
Yeah, I was surprised. I was like, maybe Gabrus knows something about it that I don't.
I'm just a fucking idiot. But guys, today we're going to be talking about touring. We did a bunch of road shows together as part of the UCB touring company, which will be known henceforth as Torco. Mm-hmm. We'll talk a little bit about Torco in a minute, but first I'd like to read some reviews of my podcast. Mm. Now, as always, listeners, shitheads out there, if you review my podcast and give me 5 stars and roast me in the comments, I will read them live-ish on the podcast. So here we go. This is from someone named Long Island Loner. John Graybush's podcast is so insignificant that when you search his name on iTunes, it doesn't come up. So I guess you'll have to go somewhere else to find out how many slices of creatine pizza he ate last night. 5 stars. Love every episode.
Wow. As soon as it said Long Island anything, I was like, ooh, this would be right up.
Yeah, I think people sort of have my number on these now. People, this is from...
He's roasting the iTunes search algorithm. <I know. laughs>
Yeah, try searching High and Mighty. You'll probably
search
find
by artist. You know, keywords different.
Keyword playlist. This is from Huge Innes. Oh, it's like Huge Innes, I guess. John Gabrus is a man without shame, or at least that's what he'd like us to believe. He's happy to point out his surface flaws, racist, lowbrow, fat, lazy, as if he can't be hurt by them. But that's just to numb himself to the pain of his real shame of a sensitive little boy who doesn't deserve love.
Wow.
That guy's got my number.
That's someone you know.
yeah, that is.
That's a close friend.
Oh, Mrs. That's my wife, Tiffany. Wow, that guy's got my number as well. Holy shit.
Sensitive boy who doesn't deserve love. I don't know. You've never struck me as that type.
Yeah, I think I secretly really, you know, I mean secretly, I fucking love and need attention.
Uh-huh.
And I think...
secretly.
secretly need attention.
I host a podcast where I scream my name over and over again at the top of it. This is from Dan from Bontonk. To listen to an episode of High and Mighty is to hear some guys run out the clock on the first half of their lives. In the final accounting, your thoughts on the Kumite will bear no weight. Save yourselves.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. Although, sort of, anytime that you're kind of turning back and telling the stories of the old days, you are sort of admitting that you're not having one of those stories right today.
You're not making new stories. Fuck, dude. It's
that's true.
I'm in the third book of my trilogy.
But that's true about your 30s, though. I've heard that about your 30s is like you just live in the house you built in your 30s. You know,
you don't have much of a choice. Yeah,
you don't have much of a choice. You have your entire 20s to kind of like. Just like create the life that you are gonna have to fucking live for a little while after that. So
right.
I don't mind sitting back in it a little bit. You
like
know?
Your 20s is when you set up your talent tree. You pick your skill set. Like I'll do some blacksmithing and some leather working.
Yeah.
And then your 30s is when you go out and grind your levels.
Yeah.
You get level up.
20s is when you build the mousetrap, and 30s is when you catch that rat.
Yeah. Yeah, and then 40s is when you kick back and eat said rat.
I didn't expect any of these reviews to be so profound or to affect me in some way. But I'm just sitting here and wow.
Here's a couple.
I guess I'm not creating stories with my life anymore.
This is from J121J. Did note, podcast doesn't come up when searching John Gabrus. That's maybe something I should fix. A little SEO can help me there. All right, this is from someone called Hyatt's Mom. Oh, no, their name is Fat and Tedious, the Gabrus story. Johnny, I don't mind when you crank out a sweaty load. When you crank a sweaty load out into a chalupa wrapper while masturbating to Keenan Ivory Wayans and Glimmer Man at 2 a.m. after you get home drunk from recording your radio casts with your friends. But please have the decency to throw it out instead of leaving it in front of the VHS machine. Why can't you do something productive with your life, like mop puke in the bathrooms at a wine dance station? Wow, Long Island shout out. Every day I'm reminded of what a morbidly obese disappointment you are, but I still love you. Wow. P.S. We have enough Colt 45 and Pringles. Love, Mom.
Great specifics.
Strong ending, but I don't know. That was a little overwritten. The glitter and the star and the
Yeah. It was a little much. It was like, I think this guy or gal, let's say guy, trying to get 15 references into one line. Yeah. It's not going to work.
It's what we comedy writers call a hat on a hat.
Hat on a hat. This is from Beto Carrasco 87. John Gabris is so fat that listening to his podcast, Give Me Cholesterol. And okay. That was English is a second language for sure. All right, this is from the EAs. The I's with a Z. Just without a space, it looks crazy. The sounds of John Garbarus, another big thing in these comments is they spell my name wrong because they know it hurts.
That's fun. Yeah.
Eating Taco Bell is the preferred torture method for prisoners on Guantanamo Bay. The idea of this turtle from Entourage wannabe offering fitness advice makes as much sense as Donald Trump volunteering at a desert water drop-off stations for migrants near the U.S.-Mexico border. Oh my God, this is long. The proudest moment his friends and family back home in New Jersey or Boston, wherever he's from, pretty sure it's Long Beach, California, actually, fuck you, had for him was when he was going out for the role of Badger in Breaking Bad, only to thoroughly and predictably let them down when he decided to do a power hour and pass out watching Predator for the 9,000th time and passing out. If you want to feel better about your physical state and social life but want to write with jealousy, then you're not as funny as this guy. Listen to High and Mighty. Oh, okay. That was oddly complimentary.
Yeah, they slipped it in at the end.
Yeah, what a cocksucker. All right, here's the last one, and then we'll talk about me via engaging you guys more. Okay, then we'll get to the third section of the podcast where I talk about myself even more, but at least it has something to do with you guys. This is from Jomifra24, Waste of Human Flesh. Gabris is a total waste of human flesh. He constantly brings up his glory year, age 18, and doesn't seem to realize that even the grossest UCB level 1 grad was fuckable at that age. The podcast has one thing going for it, though. The listeners will likely kill themselves after hearing Gabris and company scarf down Taco Bell on the air. That's called Darwinism. All right. Thank you, waste of human flesh.
That's great. Wow, yeah.
So some valid points brought up. I'm going to address them all in my own way. I changed my life, if that's okay with you guys.
Sure.
I'm going to turn my whole life around starting now, thanks to someone pointing out that I am in a fat waste of space. Guys, now that I'm recovered from that, let's talk turkey. So we've all been part of the Upright Citizens Brigade touring company and toured on our own and taught workshops on our own and taught workshops through corporate gigs, all the kind of bullshit stuff that I think a lot of stand-ups know about. Like, a lot of stand-up comedians, when you talk to them, tell you road stories, and you're like, oh, yeah, we've performed at a fucking college cafe for just three overweight Dominican girls facing the other direction while they eat lunch.
That was like a good one.
And that was not a bad one. It was nice to have some company there.
Well, the thing stand-ups don't know, though, is that we are splitting their hotel room and salary.
Right.
So for the same amount that the stand-up gets to come do his, you know, half hour at the student union, for whatever he's getting paid for a hotel room and the show, we're taking, turning into 2, 3, maybe 4 hotel rooms at the Hojos and paying us.
Yeah, so if they get one, if they get one hotel, say they get $5,000 and one hotel room at the Hilton, we get 4 hotel rooms at the Hojo and $100 each.
Yep.
Because also
dining hall meal,
and a fucking bag of granola bars and bananas waiting for us.
A sophomore with a meal card being like, I guess get what you want.
The cheese is good on the nachos.
I was talking to a stand-up comedian about this at one point. I forget who it was, but we were discussing, and I said, talking about the exact same thing, but yeah, we split the money, but they go, nothing makes a bad gig better than being with three. Like,
that's true.
That's the thing. Like, no matter
do it by myself. Yeah.
No matter how much a show sucks, the three or four of us, however many people there, we're all there together.
Yeah.
Which is not the case for a stand-up. You're like, I couldn't imagine doing every, like, you've taught some workshops like alone and stuff, like flown to a destination to teach a workshop. And that's always weird.
Yeah,
it's that feeling of when you go anywhere, like for an audition, a party or something, and you're by yourself. And you're just like, I don't even know where to stand.
Because when I do that, I'm at least like picking the city. So I'm like, oh, it's New Orleans. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
And most places, like, I'll know someone. So I would never, I'm not going to like Wichita by myself.
Right.
That would be rough.
No offense to Wichita, but it's a garbage city.
And whether it's to group or an individual, these college kids are so absolutely useless at hosting not all of them, but like for the most part, they are so used to being sort of deferential to adults that they don't understand that like you're the only person they know when they're hosting you. So they'll show up. I'll have somebody pick me up at the airport and they'll be like, sorry, it's midterm time for me. I didn't have time to promote your show and I don't know where you're staying. It's like you're apologizing to me like I'm a teacher or an adult figure, and what I actually am is a 27-year-old guy trying to make $200 doing an improv show for you and your friends.
We probably have the same gross yearly salary at this point, and you are in college student with a part-time job. I am a grown adult sharing an apartment with five people in New York City.
I do feel like we should talk about how like the two types of people that might greet you are one, like the person who's the president of the improv group, who's like the one who's like, I had midterms.
Yeah.
Or the woman who's like in her late 20s, has some sort of physical injury, like she has like a leg brace or a wrist brace.
One of those carpal tunnel, like those rollerblading.
It could be like something.
It's a late 20s woman that works on campus in some capacity.
Campus activities.
We're stereotyping, but if you're a college kid and listening to this, go introduce yourself to the student activities group and see what kind of people are there.
The faculty person who's running it, or not faculty, the administrator who's running
it. The non-student person.
Will be a woman in her pushing 30 in overalls with a major physical injury. She'll be on a crutch. She'll have like half her head shaved and like a weird cap on it. Yeah. Or she'll have like one of those big plastic boots. Guaranteed.
Almost every time.
And usually it's an injury caused by an event. It'll be like, a light fell on me.
Yeah.
Like, I slipped when I was moving a mic stand. Yeah.
We had Wiz Khalifa here last semester, and I fell down the bleachers hanging up a Wiz Khalifa poster. Student activities people are the best. The stereotypes of the students that are in them, this is my stereotype. Dorky, thin, little white dudes who are like, maybe like trying to rack up priority points or resume builders or something like that. So the sort of dorky, and they're not that into like the act, like, you know, they're not one person who's pushing to get Wiz Khalifa to come to their school. Then there's like a group usually of women of various ethnicities, a group of like super alpha females, like five or six. And I'm going to throw it out there, usually heavyset black women or Latina women that are all such like hardcore. They're like giggling to each other and they're like, y'all about to put on a comedy show. Yo, that's them. That's the UCB right there. And I'm doing black voices now. My podcast has been taken off the air. I feel like that's the other stereotype.
I hadn't thought of that. But it is oftentimes you'll enter like a giant room where there's lots of people you don't know exactly what they do.
Like a conference room with like 11 water bottles and a couple of bananas on
a
table.
Box full of like t-shirts that say like Fun Run 2014.
Yeah, they're giving away old swag. You're always getting like, hey, look, we have these.
Parent weekend.
There's that hummus thing. That one little small plate sized hummus tub.
Yeah, there's always crudité.
Well, that was on our rider.
Well, that's why. That's another thing we should talk about for Torco.
That's its own section.
A long time ago, someone created a rider before Torco became sort of professional, and they kept the rider. And the rider had like, the rider was made in like 97, so it's like
by one dude who was kind of
a healthy-ish guy.
Yeah,
but this guy, Eli Newell, shout out to Eli, and the writer was like, Red Bull, coffee, water, bananas,
something like two Red
trail
Bulls,
mix.
Pole performer.
So we would show up and there would be like 12 Red Bulls and a pot of coffee, but then we would eat dinner in like the dining hall.
Yeah.
But the other standards would be like a whole thing of pita bread. You got it everywhere.
Like a bag, and they would not prep. They would be like a plastic bag in the green room filled with filled with snacks, just not displayed or anything. It's like, there's the shit you guys want.
But I feel like it could be either end of the spectrum where it's like, one, they didn't look at it at all and you come in and they have nothing, or they have like a bag of peanuts. Or the other, where they do get everything, and it's like embarrassing because you're like, I'm not going to eat a quarter of this.
Well, we'd pack it up. If we were on a driving tour, we would pack up the car.
Oh, if it's a driving tour.
Nova bars and
I did like six or seven schools in Florida once with Fisher, Gavin, and O'Neill, and we fucking had like a car full of mini bags of trail mix and shit. The more embarrassing than both of those, than having nothing and then having everything, is that people are like, we're so sorry, we couldn't find pita bread. You're like, oh, you don't even know.
I've been all day long going to different grocery stores.
And I'm like, no, we didn't even want pita bread. That's a holdover from 10 years ago.
But it's still like, you couldn't find pita bread?
I know. You know,
like, what, yeah, there are people that don't have fully developed life skills.
Yet. Yeah, they got nothing. Yeah,
I'd like to think I did nothing. Like, I couldn't even imagine. Like, I was such an idiot in college. If I was in charge of, like, talent relations, like, even now as a grown-up who's worked in TV and been a part of networks, talent relations people don't give a fuck about you. I couldn't even imagine being 19 years old, and it's UCB. We're not even names. It's not like we're one of us is Bill Burr, and it's like we know we have to treat Bill Burr well.
And the people on the poster are not us,
right? It's always like people, Bobby Moynihan, Zach Woods.
Polar. Yeah, photoshopped in.
Yeah. And then we show up, and they've never seen
any of us. I will say it is fun to do that because no one knows what the fuck we're going to do. And then we actually put on like a good show. Right. I love when someone who's never seen improv before, this is a side here, but sees their first like real good improv show. And that's what Torco was or is. I don't know. I'm just so far
removed. You did have like really good Torco shows.
Yep.
Yeah, like a high percentage of like. Some of my favorite shows I've done were on Torco.
There's a certain group mind that comes into play when you're on the road together.
That's true.
Yeah, where it's just like, if you spent the whole day wandering around Ithaca, drinking coffee and doing bits, that show that night has just got a different energy than anything else.
True. Yeah, that's true.
Especially if it's like day three of a tour and you've been shit-faced in two different college towns. Yeah. That's another thing that I don't think a lot of stand-ups do, because when they do clubs, they have there's like a built-in bar or whatever. But when we would do colleges, the four of us, whoever the fourth person was, which was often a shout-out to Fran Gillespie, who is often our fourth member, now in New York writing on SNL, the four of us or whoever we were would go to these college parties after.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I have some distinct memories of some fucking shit getting real. Yeah. I mean, we're talking about four people in their late 20s to early 30s, depending on who's with us.
I started Torco, I was 26.
I think I started at like 25 or 26, did it for like 5 or 6 years. And we'd be on these shows where it's like, all right, they're like, let's go to a party. They're like, we're having a party at our house. We're like, we'll swing by. Yeah. And then we're the last people to leave.
Especially because it's like, especially for Gabrus and I, like, we don't play beer pong in New York.
Yeah.
It's like such a opportunity.
Yeah. We and Brandon and I actually met at a college improv festival playing like drinking games together
in college,
while we were in college. So we've always straddled the line of like bounce. Brandon's in the nerdy meathead category as well, of just sort of like play was a bouncer but also was in the improv theater group. So we missed those college parties.
We bonded the way Gabrus and I first bonded. We were at this college improv festival where we, by default, were like the meathead jocks of the
everyone festival. Hated Binghamton and Marist because we had no girls in our group between the two of us. And we were all, me and you were a head taller than every single person that was at that
and
festival.
And we were like really into weightlifting at the time. So we looked like bullies in a movie.
And someone was picking on John Golby, who was an improviser, but this person wasn't. And we threatened to kick his ass. Yeah. Two guys just visiting a Skidmore College, the most liberal arts school.
Skidmore,
and we started a fucking rumble.
And then, if I remember, we were at Skidmore years later, and like we invited some like people we'd met, like a bartender and a waitress, and people came out and wanted to hang out with us. Yep. And then we could tell that they kind of lost their affection for us because we were like outside, like
this is a great Neil, you're reminding
Jameson
out of the bottle. So we invited like townie waitresses and bartenders.
Townie waitresses were like, these guys are scumbags.
Yo, exactly. We weren't talking about it, right? Because was it the three of us at Skidmore?
Yeah.
And Frank, right? Yep. Fran was the fourth. Yep. So it was the old good dad crew. We're doing a fucking, they're like, hey, come out before the show. We're going to be drinking in the parking lot. We show up and immediately turn off townie alcoholics. Like,
we were they're drinking Jameson and maybe a joint.
We had joint and Jameson. It was right after the show.
We got off stage, and then but we still had to be there, right? Because you had to do monologues.
It was the next. Oh, we were up Friday night, and this was Saturday night. This is when Derek did their 2.5 hour comedy set.
Right.
This is where Dom and DC did a 2.5 hour comedy set. Didn't ask any of the four friends who are improvisers in the crowd to
one form they like came up with on the spot where they played a professor and a student. That went on for 45 minutes.
We're not shit talking you, Dom and DC, but for real,
that would be pretty funny.
It was funny. We were. That was also the night we drank a bottle of Jameson and smoked the joint. And
I ruined invited us on stage.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
Now, at the moment, though, because we were drunk and performers, we were like, "Oh, this sucks that we have to watch other people."
It sucks we have to watch our friends quietly.
Yeah. How often are we watching each other's improv shows these days?
Yeah, not rare, frequently, not rarely.
But yeah, the townie waitresses were like, "Oh well, thanks for nice to meet you guys. We just remember we got to go home and wash our hair."
Yeah, they were like, "Let's get the fuck." All right, and so now I'm going to tell a quick story about the next morning driving home from Skidmore. We try to wake Neil up. This is a common occurrence on Torco because we're out drinking hard, but we usually have to, because UCB wants to save every last nickel that they can. They put us on the 6 a.m. flight out of whatever, or like we have to be back. The rental car is due at 10:30. Yeah,
this was all a drive. We were on the throughway.
So this was a drive, and try to wake Neil up. We're all ready to go in the parking lot. Neil's not ready, so
it
we
would
bang
be
on. The...
Sometimes hard to reach Neil mornings of a Torco.
Yes, yes. Well, it's kind of hard to reach Neil in general. He's kind of like a little bit of a off the grid type guy. He's not always on his phone, which is a great trait when you're with Neil. It's awesome that he never fucks around on his phone. When you're not with Neil, you're like, hey, look at your fucking phone every once in a while. But Neil, we bang on his door. He finally answers it. We clearly woke him up, and he's like, yeah, I'll be out in 2 minutes. And often on tour, that meant Neil would be out in 2 minutes somehow. He would be from dead asleep to fully dressed in a suit jacket 2 minutes later and driving. On this one, he said, I'll be out in 2 minutes. Another 6 or 7 minutes pass, and he doesn't come. So we're just like, we should just follow up. We bang on the door. You open the door again, and you're scared this time. We're like, what's the matter, Neil? And you go, I fell asleep brushing my teeth. I was like, wait a minute. You're like, yep, fell asleep standing in front of the mirror. Right. When you banged on the door, I woke up.
Yeah. That happened
to me. But the story
gets
better.
Yeah. And that's not the ending of the story is... We're driving home, and we're all so brutally hungover. We went to a house party that night, I remember, and we were it was just one of those insane situations where
we brought people back to our hotel. There were people also staying with us in the hotel because we were partying in your room.
We were not the only guest group. So they're like,
right.
That went late.
We were in the parking lot. Or someone else. We were like,
oh, it was Dom and it was Dom and DC. Yeah. And
we were hanging out in somebody's hotel room until late.
We were still drinking
there was
Jameson.
Like a sketch group. Maybe, what was that sketch group from New School?
Oh, I don't remember. I remember.
Oh, yes. Lots of people. But it's like Mike Antonucci I forget what they used to be called. They're like Captain Hippo now, but they were like...
I think they were hanging out with us.
Yes, they were.
And that was at one of those... That was at that hotel where in the office, the manager's office, they had a picture of both the owners of the hotel.
The owner, husband and wife owners dressed as clowns, framed.
Yeah. It was like, we can come into your room at any time. We have all the keys.
And it's one of those old school hotels where you go from the parking lot directly into your hotel room. There's no like hallway to make you feel like a modicum of safety. So we're Neil always drove. Neil was like the dad on these Torcos in a number of ways, but Neil always drove. And on the drive home, we were also hungover. I farted, and it was like one of the worst farts I've ever. We rolled down the windows, but it wasn't enough. Neil had to pull over on the side of the New York State Thruway, get out of the car, and just throw up on the side of the road.
Yeah.
Yep. So that's like a fucking Jackass prank. Like, I farted so bad it made a friend throw up.
And have to pull over.
And we had to pull over. And then remember that woman on crutches pulled over, and she started running towards us, going like,
are you okay? A woman got on her crutches and got out of her car to ask me if I was all right while you guys were sitting in the car laughing.
It felt so awkward. She was probably a student activities leader at some other school. Based on her maladies. That was a fun weekend.
That happened to me a couple times on Torco. I would fall asleep on my feet. I would fall asleep sometimes standing in the shower. Not often, but like I can remember 3 or 4 times that identical thing happened.
Well, you like
get up on 1.5 hour sleep or something like that.
Yeah, because we're challenging each other too a little bit. It's kind of hard. It's like elementary school sleepover. It's kind of hard to be the first guy to fall asleep or first gal to.
And it's sort of like
to give up on
drinking rules where it's like it feels dumb to go to sleep. Where you're like,
yeah, when are we ever going to be in fucking Rochester again, man?
Yeah.
Just doing shows and like then going to
be here next semester. Shut up. Yeah. Here in 6 months.
Yeah. And then it's always, I think another thing we sort of talk about on the road we haven't spoken about yet is the nights and the people always turn. There's always like a fun, we're like, oh, this is fun. We're hanging out with 20-year-olds, 21-year-olds. We're all drinking. We're having a good time. We're playing beer pong. And then like they get weird or we get
suddenly
weird.
You notice it's like you and it had been 40 people and it's you and like four people.
And they're fucking wasted and it's like strange and like girls are either flirting with you or like disgusted by you. Dudes are getting like weirdly antagonistic.
Yeah.
You weren't at North Carolina with us. I think it was me, Neil, Fran, and Greg Tukulescu. And we went to like the college improv, the Chips.
I didn't do that.
We went to their house and we smoked a little dope with them. And this dude was trying to bug. This is another thing I love about being on tour. This dude, like when college students who think they're funny try to like do bits or fuck with us.
Right.
And it's like, you have no idea. We've been destroying each other for 7 hours in the car and plane to get. This guy starts trying to like bug Neil out, like make Neil trip out or whatever because we're all high. And this guy doesn't realize that it's like, we're grown-ups. We've been where you are 7 years ago, and we've been only drinking and smoking weed and fucking around since then. This guy starts trying to bust our balls. Neil does this thing where he goes, I'm going to do it. He grabs like a little chunk of his leg and goes, like he just does like this with it. He makes a noise with his mouth and acts like he's pinching, like he's stealing his leg, like he's stealing skin off of him and going, and the guy, Neil does it for 40 minutes like on pace like a couple of times a minute for like the guy started in on Neil, tried to be like funny and bust Neil's balls, and Neil flipped it on him to the point where we were like, we gotta get out.
That was Shuby Taylor night. That was when I played Shuby Taylor the human horn.
Yes. And Beans, you straight Beans in?
Oh yes.
They had like a fucked up dog that was like handicapped with like no hair and it had
Mr.
like
Mr. Beans.
Named Mr. Beans.
It was a fucked up dog.
It was like I almost euthanized it in respect of the dog. Yeah. I was like, let me snap this dog's neck. Not really, people, not really. Yeah. And then we went to Time Out Chicken that night and Greg Tukulescu, which is by the way one of the best fried chicken spots.
Oh, yeah,
so good.
Yeah,
and Greg Tukulescu, sorry to shit on you when you're not here to defend yourself, but we were really fucked up, and that's the night Greg Tukulescu just faced the wall and ate two chicken sandwiches standing over the hotel garbage can and then didn't talk to us. And there's like chicken falling out of his mouth.
In the room.
In the room in front of us, and then just laid down and went to bed.
There could be a section just on weird shit we ate at 4 in the morning.
Yeah.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
This is not a tour. I think either of you guys were on, but I did a tour once in Nashville where we were like asking locals where we should go out after the bars, and they're like, you got to go to Prince's Fried Chicken.
Right.
And I'm like, great, we'll go there. And we got a cab and he brought us there. And it's this place like on the outside sort of, and we were the only white people in it except for this like huge bald-headed white guy with a gun tucked into his belt.
Gabriel's.
Like,
that's how we met.
It was like Gabriel's with a shaved head.
And I was like, hey, I'll do improv.
And so we're there to get this chicken, which ended up being amazing. And I'm there with Brandon Scott Jones. And there's like this like woman behind us, and she was very small, like 5 feet tall. Her boyfriend or whatever was like 6'6". And she's like, she's just staring at us, and she's like, what are you guys doing here? And we're like, oh, well, we did a comedy show, and people said, this is good chicken, so we came by. And she's like, you do comedy? It's like, tell us jokes, which is a classic improv.
Which is a classic, by the way, yeah. If you're listening to this podcast, you ever meet a comedian, don't ask them to do their bit. No one asks you to fucking market some app or whatever the fuck you do for a living.
So we're like, oh, no, we do improv. It's not like that. She's like, well, do that for us. And we're like, oh, well, you know, it's like you'd give us a suggestion, then we would like act out a scene. She's like, I want to see that.
And this is online?
Online. And she's a little drunk and her boyfriend's a little drunk. And so eventually I don't know why, but we're like, okay.
No. I mean, I know why. Because you're fucking wasted and it's
we're wasted. It's like 3 a.m. And we're like, okay, you give us a suggestion. We'll do a scene. And she thinks about it for a while. And then she goes, a man fucking a woman real, real good. Has our suggestion for an infection.
Real, real good.
Real, real good. And then we're like, okay. And then we do a pretty good scene where it was like a guy had gotten a prostitute to his hotel room and she really wanted to celebrate Christmas because it was Christmas time.
Yeah.
And it kept like getting him out of the mood and like freaking him out. I can't remember which of us played which.
Just in line.
In line. And she loved it.
So this is you said it's a pretty good improv scene. I would say it's a very good improv scene for in line at 4 a.m.
It was a miracle. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And this is like a place that had a huge like nylon banner over the thing that said it would won a Steve Harvey hoodie award, which I'd never heard of what that was, but they won it. And then when we called this one driver we'd used earlier the day, and we were like, oh, can you pick us up? Can you give us a ride back? And like, we're at Princess Fried Chicken. He's like, no, you're not. And he's like, no, yeah, we are. And he's like, it's not possible that you're there. And we're like, I promise that's where we are. And he's like, holy shit, that's a really dangerous place.
Oh, come on.
And he came. Yeah, he was like this like 50-year-old like black guy. He also had a gun, brought the gun to it. And then the best part is when we go back, he's like, I'm in an R&B group. Would you like to hear my stuff? Yeah. And we're like, sure. And so what he did is he put in a CD of just the background music, and he sang live his vocals.
What?
And he was amazing.
Yeah.
That's so awesome. That's so great. You did an improv show in a Church's Fried Chicken and then saw an R&B concert on the ride home from Church's Fried Chicken. That's the kind of magic shit that happens on tour.
What's up, shitheads? This is an ad for my boy, Sypha Sounds, former High and Mighty guests. No, his show, No Small Talk, that's on Tidal. Tidal.com, T-I-D-A-L. It provides 3 million subscribers, access to nearly 40 million music tracks, 130,000 videos, playlists by experts, music journalists, all this stuff. The website is pretty awesome. It's a get on that if you're not, and definitely get on it at least to check out Sypha's show, No Small Talk. You heard about him. You maybe heard him on the hip hop episode. If you didn't listen to this episode, if you're a new subscriber, go back and listen to it. He's so smart. He's so funny. The second season of the show just was released on April 1st. You got to check it out. It's a stand up comedy show that's hosted by DJ Sypha Sounds, former Hot 97, current comedian and hip hop know it all. All 6 episodes are online, so you can binge watch your favorite comedians. It's all filmed at the Comedy Cellar in New York. You've probably heard of that. And great performers like Rachel Feinstein, Capone, Mark Normand, Mike Yard, Pat Brown, Jason Anders, Mike Troy. Great stand-up comedians. Shoots it like a concert film. So if you've never watched it, it's really awesome. Some backstage stuff, audience stuff. It feels real. It's like stand-up that you're seeing live, which is fantastic. It's not shot from 100 meters away and Chris Rock is super tiny on stage. Nothing like that. So check out the trailer at tidal.com/nosmalltalk, all one word, tidal.com/nosmalltalk. Just go to tidal.com and sign up for a 30-day trial membership right now. Watch the trailer, download the app, check out Sypha's show. That dude has been supporting me and my improv forever. You could support his show. Sypha Sounds, No Small Talk, only on Tidal. Check it out.
For every we stayed in a fucking bedbugs place and did a show for like 6 people at a college that didn't know we were having a show or that advertised the wrong date. For every show like that, there is a great show where who was with? Was it, were we together in Rochester when we performed at that weird ass like new classical musical symposium? Yeah, I know you were.
Yeah.
I think you maybe
said Aretha Franklin had just performed there
the week before. And it was like a brand new, like all like nice
RIT or RPI. Or
RPI. Yeah. Rents,
yeah.
Yeah.
Gorgeous. Yeah, yeah. Gorgeous orchestra hall.
So amazing. Yeah. And it was like 700 people sold to the brim and
acoustics. Yeah. You could set the humidity.
Right. Yeah. And it was like for every shit show you do, there's one like that. Yeah. And then there's,
and some of those festivals like Skidmore and like some of this may be a little before your time, but like there was this one theater, it's not Alfred, but another upstate New York one where it's like had a good scene and it was this lofty, like loft, like, black box where people were just packed to the gills like sitting on each other. And you do these like shows that are some of the best improv shows you've ever done. And it's all for these people who are being exposed to it for the first time. And you feel like
the energy and they're
fun.
And they're a rapt audience. They're people who are choosing to go to this college show.
Yeah.
And they're,
there's no better improv audience than a festival of people that are passionately in love with improv,
yeah,
don't regularly get to see good improv.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And that's
where it's just like, oh,
it's the best.
God. And like, you also go down with the ship in front of disinterested freshmen who have to be there for an orientation.
Those are always the worst when you find out that you're performing as part of like a day-long
mandatory.
Yeah, and you're like, fuck, they're not going to be into this.
I think Neil was. We did one where we were driving up to do, I think it was at Bard, and on the way there, they called us to say, an RA resident advisor had fallen off a cliff and died.
During a tour,
incredibly sad story. Yeah, it was like freshman orientation weekend, and an RA leading a tour had fallen off a cliff and died.
Yeah,
and then here's where it gets darkly funny: is that they were trying to guilt us into canceling. And we didn't really have the authority to cancel. That was my read on it from the phone calls.
They were like, I remember it being like, oh, we can cancel. We'll go back. And they're like, no. We think it'll be good.
We were asking, are you canceling?
Do you want to cancel? Gotcha.
That was, and this is a little cynical, but we were on the road coming up, and we were saying, well, we're still coming. We don't really have the authority to say we're not going to come anymore.
Right. Like, I mean, I guess if we're still going to get paid, maybe, but we can't make that decision.
We can't tell you that it's so sad, which it is so sad.
If you cancel, we understand.
Yeah. If you cancel, we understand, but we're not going to tell you that we're going to decide not to go. So they were being kind of weirdly legalistic on their end. I don't know for sure that that's what was going on in their head, but that certainly seemed to be what was happening on the phone. But so we were like, okay, well, we're still coming. We're still going to do the show.
So then we go, and she's like, I haven't told anyone because I wasn't sure if that. And then right before we go, she's like, about a half an hour ago, I emailed everyone, so everyone knows now. And then she's like, avoid anything with death or people falling or something. She had this list, and we're like, what?
Of course, yeah. But
I mean,
Jesus.
But yes, of course.
But how can you not?
Tell us that and then go do comedy.
Oh, it's terrifying. Yeah. Oh, that's some real. And that's the other thing, too, that is not being. We're sort of dancing around it here. It was in the early days of Torco. It wasn't run that official. It was a little confusing. So it was one of those situations where it's like, you shouldn't be on the phone with me deciding if we should do this show or not because a student just died. There's got to be someone higher up. Yeah. But because they're like, here's your contact person, and it was always on the, you know, Torco was often on the weekends or a night show and people just aren't in their offices in New York.
It was like early on Torco, it's much more organized now, but it would be a thing where like the person in charge, I remember one time we like had all these flights canceled and we were going to miss these workshops we were going to teach, and the one person in charge was like upstate apple picking, so we couldn't reach him. And then the next person, his like deputy in charge, had her shift at anthropology, so we couldn't reach her. And there was no one else.
Yeah. Yeah. You always have to go up the ladder. Yeah. Yeah. Because it's, you know, that's nobody's making a lot of money working for UCB, you know? And
so they have to work at anthropology, don't want to work on the weekends. Because it was like, it's way smarter now, but it was like we were part of the new building it. So we had no idea what was going on.
Yeah.
And it would be the things, too, where like just the only ultimatum, the only thing that they went by was save money. So it was like we'd fly from like New York to Ohio with a layover. It's like a 2.5 hour flight, and we'd lay over in like Buffalo, and it would be like 4 hours in a Buffalo airport. You're like, get to LaGuardia at 5 a.m.
Right. Share cabs if you can.
Fly from, actually, cabs weren't the rule came in that they couldn't reimburse cabs.
Like, what airport?
Take the air train to JFK at 5 a.m. on a Sunday.
Pretty fast.
Fly. See, Neil, a man from the past right here.
But it would be like, you know, Pennywise Pound Foolish. It would be like, okay, now we're going to save $20 a flight for everybody's ticket. We're going to save 20 bucks on cheap tickets having you guys fly at 5 a.m. But then it's like, you know,
you all need different rental cars because of some wrinkle.
Right, right. Yeah, and that'll be the other thing.
We got four Ford Fiestas for you to drive around when you land separately.
We had one car. Yeah.
That was like when we went to Guthrie, Oklahoma for the Gentlemen of the Road tour, which was me, Neil, Shannon, and Molly, and maybe, oh, and Fran too. And the five of us were staying at the worst possible hotel we could have been staying at, but we had four rental cars.
Oh, the Days Inn, right?
The
sketchiest place we've ever stayed is Charlotte. Yes. That Hojo's that was across from the strip clubs, where it was full at midnight and empty
and
in
you
the
could
morning.
It was like you could get by the hour.
So it was a Hojo's that opened up to, it was another one where the doors opened to the parking lot, and the parking lot was essentially shared. It was across a one lane, one way street from the back of a strip club. And this is in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Gavin, who's an adult man, was so afraid to be in his room by himself. he asked Neil, he's like, do you care if I'm in the other bed with you? Because I feel more comfortable having another person in the room with
you. Yeah. Oh, well, that's totally fair.
But it was by the hour. I mean, it was for sure by the hour.
And I was, and this leads to the show that we did in Charlotte, but at the time I was dating someone who was doing Teach for America and living in Charlotte. So I was at her place, so I didn't have to stay there. Fran, like, basically called them. She's like, I'm going to a better hotel. I'm using the money they paid us for the show to pay for it, and you'll pay me back.
Because it was like, this hotel is too
cheap. It was bad news. Yeah.
The worst of the, like, hundreds of Days Inns that I've stayed in. This was...
Yeah, this was a Hojo's.
Yeah. But I'm saying, it's like, Days Inn was usually like, can't get worse than this. Yeah. Oh, it could. But that same tour, occasionally, we would get booked for things, right, that, like, wasn't a college. Like, college was 90% of the time, but occasionally it'd be a performing arts center or a small towns theater or this place, like a rock venue.
Yeah.
Normally gets bands in Charlotte, North Carolina. And we showed up, and by the time the show started, there was maybe 9 people there.
Yeah. And they were very nice to us, the venue.
Yeah, very nice to us, considering that they lost probably a lot of money bringing us there. And one, this is like... It's like, so I'm dating this girl who lives there, and it's like, oh, I kind of want this to be like a cool show because her friends are going with her. And it's like, already I'm like the dude who goes improv, and that cannot be so cool. So like, it'd be great if this was like a big theater where everyone loves the show. It's not. It's not that at all. But then, so of the 9 people, probably 5 are my then girlfriend and her 4 friends. And then of the other people that are there, one is this like... probably 60-year-old businessman, like in a suit, and this...
who looks like a kind of Joe Biden if he were sort of a teetering drunk.
That's a good description. Yeah. And then he's with this like pretty, probably early 30s black woman.
Yeah, or mixed. Yeah, yeah, dark skinned woman. And he had his like seersucker suit, or not seersucker, like blue kind of seersuckery type jacket, and distinguished, you know, pocket square sort of thing.
And so we often on the road, or almost every time we interview someone is for the first half of the show, and base the first half on that interview. And this woman on the front row insists on being the interview, and she's like hollering and jumping up and down. And so we call on her. We start interviewing her, and it's very clear early on that she's lying about her answers, about things like, what do you do for a living? And that also her answers make it more and more clear. It's like, oh, you're an escort. This guy brought an escort to this improv show.
Oh, my God.
Because she's saying, it's like, what do you do for a living? She's like, I make people happy.
But she started with his job. Yeah. She started saying...
She knew what he did,
So she was parroting she was parroting what he must have said to her over dinner was what he did. Because she was like, I'm an executive.
Yeah, I'm the VP in charge of development or something. Like,
it's like, I do Six Sigma. I'm really into Six Sigma. But then she couldn't tell us what that was.
She had heard details from what he said, but couldn't.
And then tried to reiterate it on her own. Yeah. Oh, that's so weird.
But by the end, there was no one there who was like, oh, you are a prostitute.
She's like, I used to be an unlicensed massage therapist. Yeah.
That is the best version of what... That's the best thing you call a prostitute is a freelance massage therapist.
So then, that's our interview that we have to go off of. This like woman like lying to us for a while. And then the next part is that she's immediately... Fran, again, was the only woman who was on that tour with us, and she was immediately obsessed with Fran. And I think in her mind was cheering her on. But anytime Fran stepped out to do a scene, she would start yelling. She'd be like, you go, girl!
Go get him, girl.
Fight the power. Get him, girl. So that Fran almost couldn't speak in any of the scenes she was in because the woman would shout over every time
she was talked. So aggressively supportive that she was...
Yeah. Whenever we would edit, she would go, get with the passion, and clap.
And there was that's a phrase that I've never heard.
And I initiated a scene like, I'm like trying to pull premises from this what she gave us. And I started a scene later as like very basic. It's like, I'm an unlicensed accountant. And she recognized that I was going after her and booed. She was just like, boo. I almost couldn't do that scene. Yeah. And this again is the one show that my girlfriend brought her friends to.
And it's just like, so your boyfriend interviews prostitutes and then interacts with them on stage for like 90 minutes?
For, like for 9 people.
Yeah, more or less.
She like fell over also.
I felt bad. I went out for a smoke at the break and I thought that they might leave And but she was very, like, she was kind of sweet in a really drunk way at the break, and was like, "Oh, you guys are, you know." And it's like, okay, you know, he and the, you know, the guys, the Johns just standing there, kind of
like
drunkenly.
Too much attention has already been brought to him.
He 100%. Has no, and then she took a full face plant outside. She was smoking a cigarette, and I sort of, as pleasantly as possible, said, like, "Hey, don't talk as much during our show," but in a friendly, "We're smoking together, it's a fun night" kind of way. "Hey, we're doing a second half. Maybe we'll do it a little differently this time, where you don't scream as much."
Where the four of us are going, we're going to kind of be the four. We're going to be the stars of the show this time around. Yeah.
And something I framed it as something like, "Okay, well, we're done. We're not going to interview you again. We're doing something." But I was as nice as I could be, because it's, you know, she's drunk and she's doing what
and
she's
she
doing.
And she is 11% of your audience.
And she's a big part of the only one having a great time.
And then I walked down and I made a phone call or something, because I remember looking at this from the parking lot. Not like the sidewalk by the venue, but like further away, and I just watched her sort of stumble and take a full face plant on her heels, and then it was people from the venue who like helped her up. It went from being completely insane and hilarious to like getting
depressing.
A little too real.
Who was, I think you were both with me, but maybe I could have the group wrong. Who was with me when we went, it was like an upstate school, I think it might have been Ithaca, and we went and we smoked out of a penis bowl at someone's. we'll blow past.
It was like gray.
It was like a gray, veiny dick.
It looked like some. Yes.
Where you put the weed in the balls, like an ostrich's penis, and the hole was in the pee hole.
Yeah.
You put the urethra in your mouth, lit the balls, and breathe. They're like, "Who wants to suck that dick?" We're screaming.
And that was the same party where there was a guy who could name any Academy Award winner.
That's exactly what I was going to say. And there was like some sort of dude with
I remember that guy.
Yeah, and Savant, he would be like, "You name a year," and he would name like all who won Best Picture, Best Actor, Best Actress, or something like that, or any version. If you said Best Actress, he could tell you who won Best Actor and what year it was, like, which was. And we had that. You tell a group of improvisers that are fucked up out of their minds that there's a dude who could just recall information. Yeah. We talked to that psychopath for 25 minutes.
We were the only people that would have talked to him there, and we were obsessed with him.
Yeah. Right. We also were kind of like, this is obnoxious of a way to phrase this, but we would also do things like go to a college party after we'd met like a handful of people, pick one person, a guy or a girl who like we interacted with at some point, and we're kingmakers or queenmakers, at least for that party, where it'd be like the girl who drove us said something.
Shy girl.
Exactly. It's always
like, "Where's Sarah?"
Yeah, and then we're like, "Sarah!" And she's like, "Hi, guys." We're like, "Sarah's doing a fucking funnel right now."
Yeah.
And we would just take one person, and they would be like, we would make their fucking evening and like turn them into like, we're like, "Fucking Sarah, you're coming with us from here on out. You're on the road with us."
When we did college in New Jersey, there's this guy named Dan who like was the student assigned to drive us around.
Yes, and I was at this show.
He was like a straight edge guy, never drank.
Me, you, Fisher, Murray, and it was like five dudes. I remember it was like five.
And he like happily drove us around to everything we did that night. And he was like our mascot who we like cheered.
Do you remember we were at a fucking on campus party, and since it's a state school, the state police came in. And they came in and were like, "Who here is over 21? We need to see IDs," and the four of us. At the time, John Murray was like 31 years old. Yeah.
This happened in Delaware, too.
That happened to us at Delaware,
That happened to us at Delaware. We showed up at some house party to kind of... And we know how old we are. Like, we're not trying... I've been doing tour cards since I was like 23, too. And it's like, 23, yes. 24, sure. 25... Okay, 26, I don't know
about
this.
You're holding up your ID, this is your 28 years old.
And when we were showing the cops, we were like, they were laughing at us. Yeah. They were all right, guys, you're fine. Like, you might be getting arrested because, are you serving me? Yeah. Who bought this liquor? And you're like, oh, no.
Yeah, we skittered out the back door at Delaware and hit the road because the cops were coming in.
Oh, God.
God, that was lame.
But that's still sort of, it is one of those things where it's like, the reason we're doing it is like, oh, yeah, let me see if I still got the moves. I'll go to a college party. I'll play beer. But cops, let's run.
Yeah.
Like, I love that shit. Yeah. When's the last time you ran from the cops in your 20s?
Yeah, I'm not going to say.
Me neither. Yeah. They're still chasing me. Yeah. They're circling the building we're recording That's in right now. what were some of the, like, I'm trying to remember, like, memorable shows, like any shows that went really well?
Well, we would get into these mapping game things. That was like running thing with their crew where we would do these, like, we would lean into these hard logic.
One I remember that we did at Brockport,
uh-huh.
And the reason I remember because we flipped the mapping game, was we did one where it was college is prison.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And we immediately flipped it and did prison is college.
We did 12 minutes of a group game that was... college is like prison. Welcome to your first day, fish. And your roommate was like aggressive, yeah. Whatever. And then we did 12 minutes of the opposite, where it was
where
all prisoners.
Like an RA, where the warden's like an RA. It's like, hey, yeah. I'm the warden, Chad.
And one of my favorite things I remember from that show is Neil Casey rattling off a cappella group pun names.
Oh, yeah.
Of you were like, literally, like, well, you could join the Testosterones, you could join the blah, blah, and you went down, like, because that's another thing from going to a bunch of colleges. You rack up college specifics. You're always reading the college newspaper. You're always, what's the punny name of the acapella group? What's the punny
in
name
that
of the
mapping game? Was it like, in the same way that you join, like, Latin Kings?
Yes.
Was it like, yeah.
You got, like, fucked into the acapella group or something like that. Yeah. I feel like SUNY Brock. That's my mom's alma mater. She went there for one semester. We went there together. There's a handful of things I remember from that show, from that evening, that I want to just discuss.
It wasn't an evening.
Oh, it was a daytime show.
You could, like, look out the window and people were playing Frisbee.
Right. It was like 6 p.m. or something
that. Yeah.
It was something earlier, super weird. Yeah. So we go out to a local... We're like, what's the local dive bar? We were getting tired of going to those college bars that were filled with people and, like, everyone's partying super hard and all that shit. So we went to a dive bar. We walked in, and two different things happened in this when we knew we were old. Is when I was like... They had Saranac Black Forest on tap, which is one of my favorite beers of all time. It's rarely ever on tap, except in, like, deep upstate New York.
I was going to say where I grew
up. Yeah. And I'm like, I'll have a pitcher of Black Forest. I'm like, holy shit, you have Black Forest? I'll have a pitcher. And the guy goes, just as a heads up, it's $11. And that's like, wait, what? And then I find out that it's $5 Busch Light pitcher night. Uh-huh. So we're living in New York. That's another thing we haven't spoken about at all about Torco part of the fun of going out in a college town is it's like, this place has 50-cent rum and Cokes.
Right.
And
right,
it's like, we are in our 20s, but we're broke. We're fucking broke. Yeah. So it's awesome.
We are chasing $150 pre-tax.
Right.
For a weekend. We're giving up a weekend.
We're giving up. I'm leaving my now wife, my then girlfriend, at home alone for a weekend so I can make $300 doing three shows and a workshop in, like, fucking butthole Missouri. And spend $100 on liquor and booze. Yeah.
Also, in that same bar, though, there was the, like, cliched thing of we walk in and every face turns to us.
Oh, yeah.
We're not from...
We're 10 years old. Yeah, we're clearly not college. And so we're getting a little fucking side eye from some locals. But that girl comes over who was like one of... She was at the show and she was like, the show is super funny. I want to buy you guys a shot. And we're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And she's like, I'll get us a shot. We're like, great. She comes back and she's got fucking shot glasses with, like, neon green liquor in them. And we're like, what is this? She's like, it's called Tie Me to the Bedpost. It's so good. And we're like, oh, right, college shots.
Yeah. Right.
So we all bang it down and it's like Midori and, like, rum and, like, Jaeger.
Yeah,
and it's like glowing in the dark. And we're like, oh, yum. And it was garbage. It tasted awful, but it was that shit you used to drink in college. And then we're like, we'll get a shot. And she's like, oh, okay, cool. And Neil, I think it was Fran or Neil, I forget who, comes back with just five Jamesons. Like, here, whiskey. And she's like, she, like, took one shot. She was like, oh, how do you guys drink this? And we're
we did like a ton. It was like Pickleback time.
Oh, it was Pickleback era.
Pickleback.
Yeah, so then that was definitely Fran who turned us all on to Picklebacks. That Brockport was a really fun. And then we went bowling that afternoon, too. Didn't we go to like the weirdest bowling alley?
Once I think we had Time to Kill, and it was like a town where you could bowl for $2.
Oh, that was that was always look up the bowling alley. Yeah,
The arcade, the movie, the local comic book shop, the the handful of things. Like, go to when we were at Oberlin, it was like, oh, there's an Army Navy store, a Goodwill store, a comic book shop, a cafe. That's 3 hours. That's your afternoon.
The most depressing one we ever did was that one in Valdosta, Georgia, on our long tour. And we did they put us in the concrete handicap ramp to eat our dinner.
Yeah,
or like we just have to sit in we could either sit in the lobby where all the audience was already lined up and eat in front of them, or we could go out on the handicapped ramp and eat by ourselves. And then the audience was
organized by a woman in a sorority.
Yeah.
And she's like, I didn't have a lot. It was like one of those things I didn't really get to publicize it.
I didn't get to do my job. Like they say it to you like you're going to be like, hey, your education is the most important thing to me.
Yeah.
But then after that, so the show was just like five sorority girls and then like
all white.
And then in the back row were like six kids who were black. Yeah. So it was like segregated.
It looked super. We're in Georgia and we're playing for what looks like a segregated audience.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of 12 people.
In a lecture hall.
Yeah.
In a lecture hall. And then afterwards, this was just the most depressing. We were staying at this Courtyard by Marriott that was under heavy construction. Like, there was no lobby and, like, there were no ceilings in the hallways between rooms. It was under construction. And then we went to a movie theater and just saw The Social Network.
Yep.
The four of us. And I remember it was my mom's birthday. So I called her from the parking lot before The Social Network. I was like, things are great.
Oh, yeah. You can reach what you think is rock bottom on a tour, and then you're like, only to find out next year that was pretty good.
Yeah.
What made it worse too is the night before we had one of the best Turco general experiences ever. So it's at SCAD, Savannah College of Art and Design. They put us up in like the place they put like visiting professors, which was this like amazing.
Like plantation,
Savannah
like,
mansion, townhouse thing
on the park, like on their main.
It was
square
crazy.
Park.
There's
it was
like a fountain in the back.
Yeah.
There's like a butler there, which was like cool and made us uncomfortable because he's like, "Can I make you anything to eat?" And it's like, and it was like, again, a black gentleman in like a white jacket, and you're in this southern mansion who's asking if you want anything, and you're like, "I'm not really comfortable with this."
It's a culture shock for real,
for sure.
Like, it's like, all right,
and they're playing like banjo music over the. It's like, yeah, but we stayed in this like a beautiful, amazing place. We do the show at like the downtown theater that had some sort of deal with SCAD.
It's beautiful
so
musical,
it's, like, gilded gold and like,
oh, awesome.
It was like maybe the biggest crowd I had performed.
700.
I thought he was maybe more than that. I thought it was like 2,000.
Okay. Yeah.
But
ooh, either way.
They interviewed us for like the local news. So we were like stars.
And the theater director took us out to this very nice dinner, very gracious, telling us about their school, asking about us. It was really wonderful. They're starting this sort of like alternative comedy elective minor program
major
in theaters or something. It's like wild.
It's crazy.
That's another thing. I mean, this is the only way I know how to segue. That's another thing we haven't really talked about. But another thing we haven't really talked about is the amount of work you have to do on these tours that are outside of your performance. Like, so
but
like
for sure part of the job.
Yes, you brought it up about bowling, right? So we'd have an 8 p.m. show,
right.
But in order to save money on flights, you'd leave New York at 6 a.m., get there at 9 a.m.
Yeah.
You'd land at 9 a.m., you can't check in till 2, and the show is not till 8, and they need you at the venue at 5.
Uh-huh.
And they're like, the improv group wants, you either have to do a workshop, or teach a workshop to an improv group, which was okay, that meant a couple of extra bucks, or it was like, just go to your hotel and take a nap. That was the other thing, is like, I've been to so many cities in America where I just napped the day away because I had to get up at 6 a.m. I had a show at 11 the night before, and you're not sleeping, and then you party all night. But you would have to go out to dinner with the improv group and eat like wraps at a fucking cafe and answer questions always about how the UCB chooses who goes on tour.
Should I move to New York?
Should I move to New York? Should I move to LA? What's long form versus short form? What's game?
Do you have to take classes if you're already really good?
Yeah, like just the same, just the most like the same shit I would have asked if I was in college.
Yeah, nothing
if
wrong
given
with
the opportunity.
Yeah.
In hindsight, I don't know. I look back to when Mike Reese, one of the Simpsons writers, came to our school, and the college improv group got to have dinner with him. A couple of students got to have dinner with him, and I'm like, in hindsight, I must have looked the exact same way these shitheads kids looked.
Oh,
yeah,
for sure. Ed Norton did stand up at Binghamton once, and we opened for him. And we were like,
Jim
so
Norton
weird.
Or Ed
yeah,
Norton?
Yeah, Jim Norton. I'm sorry, Jim Norton.
That would be really great if Ed Norton did like a monologue, an hour long monologue, and we need the Binghamton
he
improv.
Did like American History X was a one man show.
Yeah.
And the Pappy Parker Players made an appearance.
Pappy Parker Players opened. And it was like exactly what I would have complained about years later, where he had his like green room situation set up with like a sandwich thing and stuff. And we were like there hanging out with him while he ate. And he was very nice.
Yeah.
And we all like thought he was hilarious.
But it is one of those things where it's like then when you're performing, like we come back to our green room and there's like the student activities kids are like eating our sandwiches,
hanging out. It's like, oh no, we need just a little time.
So, yeah, we need 10 minutes to say good show.
Yeah.
Brandon and I got to go to the Dominican Republic for a tour coat.
That's a highlight.
That's a real highlight. We spent 3 days in the Dominican Republic to do one show on the last day, and we turned the entire company against us after the show. Like,
but it was perfect.
It was great.
So it was this like marketing company with like too much money.
The best people in the world.
Ugh.
Just like
flew their whole company in,
from North Carolina, South Carolina. Yeah, so everyone's like Southern, like ex college lacrosse players. Every guy and every girl is like athletic and beautiful and drunk. These are like party cities. We're all in the Dominican Republic. They're getting hammered all weekend. We're seeing them. Yeah. We're meeting them, blah, blah, blah. We do a show on the last night. They're like, you can go as offensive
the
as you want.
The whole time. Like the days before, they're like, do whatever you want. We're the hippest like company. Yeah. We don't care. Yeah. So then we do the show.
We prove them wrong.
But not immediately. So first we do, like, normally a Turco show would be split up in a first half and a second half. But we did such a long first half. We did probably like 60 minutes or something. And everyone
including Gabrus's crowd work at the beginning.
Yeah, which is also we should talk about after this. Yeah. And they loved it. Like, even though we had to interview like one of the presidents, and he was like, not the
And English wasn't his first language either, right? Yeah. Which is not a dig, but it's just harder to get someone to be forthcoming.
And sometimes just the people in charge don't want to embarrass themselves,
which
I
is completely understandable. Yeah. But you should not volunteer yourself for that. Then pick the person with the thickest skin who's okay with being
but
a company.
But we still did a great first half. I remember one reoccurring bit though was like someone was like sexually obsessed with the boss.
So the boss, there was two high up guys and they were both handsome older dudes.
Very fit.
Very buff, like fucking like they looked like they hiked and kayaked all the time. They were like and one guy was like Latino or something like that.
Yeah, I think
and
he was Puerto Rican.
Puerto Rican,
he was like
super handsome.
5, he'd played him for Puerto Rico in the Olympics.
Yes, exactly. And then the other dude was like a super handsome, wealthy guy.
Yeah.
And we set up that because they were so handsome that everyone writes erotic fan fiction about
like,
the two of them.
Via like Twilight, like are you team whatever? Team
yeah. So it was like rather than like Team Jacob, it was like they were the two heartthrobs.
Yeah.
And we set up this crazy ass fucking thing.
But they love that. And so then we get done and we immediately go to the bar because it's all inclusive. And the other thing was that like some local dude turned us on to beer with rum in it.
Oh, yeah. Drinking a Presidente with a cerveza con ron, con poco ron. And we would just pour a little bit of rum right in the beer. And me and Brandon were drinking that all weekend.
I really did not like the taste of it. But after like two, I'd be like, well, whatever. And so we did like at least one or two of those after our show. And they're like, we'd love if you could do an encore. Just like 20 minutes. It's
and like, we were like, we really shouldn't.
I feel like everyone's already on to other things. It's and eventually they convince us to do it.
And holy shit, it was like the most offensive 20 minutes of comedy.
So we can talk about it.
We literally played a...
So it starts...
So there was a break.
Ah,
I see.
We were drinking. It's dangerous. Then we come back. And then one of the... It's like one of those classic improv scenes where someone's playing a pregnant woman getting a sonogram and the doctor's talking about the sonogram. And you're like, okay, cool, what's the unusual thing going to be? And then of course it's like, oh, this baby has just a gigantic penis. So it starts
that's there. The opening and it's the baby has a huge dick and it's getting an erection, right?
Well, so then we cut to the woman's in labor. She's unable to deliver the baby because the baby currently has an erection, and so it's impossible to get it out of the woman. So the doctor has to reach inside the woman to masturbate the baby in order for the erection to go away.
And the baby comes sliding out. We talk about how the baby's come sliding out of her
out
on a wave of cum. Like we say, it's coming out on like a wave of baby cum. And it's like the person's like, the placenta, it's baby cum. Like we're doing the most obnoxious, gross. And I think we make it like the CEO of the company's kid or the CEO of the company is born. We shall name him Daniel or so, with a glorious cock like this. We do something stupid like that. And then afterwards they were just like, that was a little too far.
At least some people in the audience immediately went to HR and complained about it. And we were no longer really as well.
You're no longer the heroes of the weekend.
No, we were.
Well, some people didn't care. And some people were still like, and they were drunk also.
Yeah. A majority of people did care. I would say we offended a majority of people.
Maybe.
So wait, we talked about my crowd work. That is my favorite part of being on tour
is when you're there and there's no chance that I'm going to have to be like, hey, everybody.
Yeah, because some people don't like doing that. And then I just was like, oh, I'll do it. I could talk to the crowd up top. And then I found that I enjoyed that
more. You are great at it.
You're great at it.
Just shitting on college kids that decide to volunteer and share information with me.
Yeah, like if you were like, if this was like a D&D thing for improvisers and you could give different strengths to different things, you would have like, and I've never played D&D, so this is my understanding of it, but you would have like a 10 or 28 for crowd work.
18. Yeah. 18 is the highest, like, is the highest natural score you can have.
Yeah.
You roll 3d6 for stats, okay? it is so much fun to me to come out and just try to get them, and we sort of use that as to our advantage of like, that gave us some more information that maybe we wouldn't have in the interview or something like that.
And you were also very good at, that's also super helpful for road shows, dealing with assholes.
Oh yeah, you got to
immediately turning the crowd against them and having it become
but keeping them liking us.
Yeah, because I've seen other people, like someone says something in the crowd or something and they like attack them and it just makes the mood drop.
Yeah.
And so it's like, how do you shut them up while still keeping things fun?
I remember a specific show where there was like two douchebags who were talking in the front row, and I crossed the line. I felt the crowd turn against me because I was like, well, you two, I got so mad at these two guys and I fucking cut them down like a little too hard.
Yeah.
And the crowd is like, fuck you, man.
Yeah, even if the people are assholes, they're still like, we don't want you to like hurt their feelings.
Right. Well, because also you don't want to watch a show where someone's just dressing down an audience member, because you have status when you're on the stage. So it's fun to see you wield that status in a fun way. But the second you're like, abuse it, you're in the crowd, you're like, oh, leave this fucking.
Yeah.
Like, I love Kramer's stand up, you know?
The stand-up. Yeah.
Kramer's so my favorite stand-up comedian. He does great crowd work. All right. Well, anything else? Any last memories of tour? I mean, now that we're done with this, we're going to be like emailing after or texting after this.
Being stuck in New Orleans for an extra
week.
Yeah,
it's another like great thing. There was like one of those weird, like we did another like saving money thing. We did a show at Northwestern Louisiana State or something, like maybe like a 6-hour drive north of New Orleans. But we flew into New Orleans and drove up and then went back to New Orleans.
Same night.
Same night.
That's classic Turco shit too. Cool. It's in Buffalo. Well, actually, it's 4 hours from Buffalo, but you'll be flying in and out of Buffalo.
Pittsburgh. Yeah. So as we're going back, there's like all these, which hurricane in New York was it?
It was the one that wasn't much. So it was Irene.
It was Irene.
Yeah.
But it was enough where they were like closing down airports and stuff. And Carter, who's in charge, who we all love, but at the time he was like, we need to get you on these flights. And we're like, we're not going to get in a flight to hopefully make it into a hurricane before they shut down the airport.
But in his mind, in his managerial mind, sense, it's like, we can't spend another $300 on hotel rooms. I'd rather risk the lives of my performers.
But well, what ended up happening, we didn't. We did. Well, we went into the airport, but it was already canceled. So then we had this crazy situation where we're in New Orleans because there's a hurricane in New York. And we get to stay like at a nice hotel in the French Quarter for another 3 nights, I think.
Yeah.
Just hanging out.
Oh, it's so awesome.
Eating.
And New Orleans is like literally the best place.
And like we did an indie show that was a great show.
Yeah,
it was great.
I'm going to have Neil and a New Orleans native on for another episode to just talk about how awesome New Orleans is.
Let's do one from down there. Let's go.
Yeah, let's go. Let's do it live. Let's do it live from the Chart Room, one of my favorite bars.
Yeah.
Aaron Rose Cafe.
Yeah.
The Frozen Irish Coffees.
Take a man shot.
All right. I'm going to end this episode with the man shot. I'm going to tell this man shot story real quick. So we went to New Orleans. So Outlook of the Poet, previous guests, me, Ben, and Gavin, we got booked to do Tulane, and we got they were going to get us 3 hotel rooms, and we're going to do 1 night in Tulane, stay in New Orleans. We convinced Tulane to just book 1 hotel room for 3 nights, and it all ended up costing everyone except for me, Ben, and Gavin the same amount of money, where we're like, if you're paying for 3 hotel rooms, pay for 1, and if the flight is leaves on Friday, comes back on Saturday, why can't it leave on Friday, come back on Monday? And me, Ben, and Gavin are going to go down there, do a show, we're going to stay for 3 nights. Find out out of nowhere that Neil is also there on separately on like a family vacation.
We're doing French Quarter Fest, me and my brother. And
right,
my
you guys always go down. Is that around Thanksgiving? Because I feel like you're down there for Thanksgiving.
Oh, no. Was it a Thanksgiving? It could have been either one. I might be getting confused.
Your family's constantly down in New Orleans.
I love New Orleans.
You have a very good, like, drinking, consuming type family that I can real get behind. Where everyone,
when we go on vacation, we will party.
Yeah. Yes, I love that about your family. Who we met when we all went to University of Delaware and went out and got all drinks with your aunt's extended family. And it was like a fucking great evening, of course.
And they dropped us off at that party that the cops got busted up for.
Right, that's why.
Crammed into my dad's car, and then we dropped us off at a house party that got busted by the cops.
We were fucking 16 for one whole evening. I forgot about that your dad drove us, and I was sitting on your lap in the back seat. And I'm like twice your size. Yeah. We're down in New Orleans. We do this show. It's a pretty fun show. We're so stoked that Neil's there. We get Neil to do the show with us. No one's going to complain about adding Neil to a show.
We tried to take the streetcar out to Tulane, and then they got so freaked out by the timing that we got off the streetcar and they picked us up.
They picked us up next to the streetcar. Yeah. They were like, get off the streetcar. We're right here waving you down. Because we were like, we'll take the streetcar. And we've been asking the dude for weed, and he gave us like one joint. Like, you could tell. I forgot what it's like in college. Someone's right. Like, here you go, man. You're like, thanks.
Yeah. This is everything I have.
Yeah. So we go to this bar the next day, and we've been going to Erin Rose Cafe, great New Orleans bar. Get the Irish iced coffee. It's blended with Jameson and ice cream and coffee. It's so fucking good.
It's amazing.
And we're there, and it's a wedding. There's like 20 people in there, a woman in a bride's gown, a couple of dudes in tuxes, and some big, giant, bald dude with one of those like anthrax goatees, you know, that just sticks straight out. And he's like, I'm the Right Reverend Bob or something like that. I forget what his name was.
Evil Bob.
The Right Reverend Evil Bob. And he's like, I'm Evil Bob, but you can call me the Right Reverend Evil Bob. Right. I married these two people. He's like, would you guys like to take a pass on the Bible or whatever, take a hit of the Bible or something? We were like, no, we're sort of just atheist scumbags or whatever. And he opens up the Bible and there's a flask inside of it.
Right.
So we hit it. It's chartreuse. We start doing shots. I'm doing pony races of chugging Miller High Lifes against this dude, and he's like, we got to get you back here to race against so and so, like some other dude's name. It's like the best day of my life. I'm like chugging against adults. I mean, I'm an adult. And we're drinking, we're going hardcore, and this is like our last day. We're flying out that night, and we're bombed, and it's like 1 p.m. He's like, you guys got to do a man shot. And we're like, I'm not doing it. He's like, come on, one man shot. It'll fucking, you can't ask what's in it. You can't smell it. You just got to do a shot of it. I'm like, I'm not doing this. I know this prank. It's going to be a cement mixer, which is Bailey's and lime juice, and it curdles into concrete in your mouth. And I'm like, I'm not fucking falling for this. He's like, you got to do it. And he talks us into it. He's like, I'll do it with you. And then he turns to the bartender. He's like, these guys are going to do a man shot. And she's like, for real? Well, I got to go downstairs and get some stuff.
Right.
And we're like, oh my God, was it fucking paint? Or, you know, who knows? The bartender leaves. She comes back a little later. She's like, all right, you guys want some man shots? And we're like, and I'm literally like, I have heart palpitations. Like, my heart's racing. I'm like, I don't want to do this man shot. And he's like, I'll do one. And like a woman is like, someone's like, do you want to do a man shot? And she's like, fuck no. No fucking way. I've seen what it does to people. And we're like, oh my God, this is too intense. Right. Too much going on. So we all get the shot. She's like, don't drink. Don't smell it. Don't sip it. Just shoot it down. So it's me, Rogers, Gavin, and Neil. We all have little shot glasses. Okay. Got this big Right Reverend Evil Bob has a shot glass. And we're like, he's like, all right. One, two, three. And the second we throw it down our throats, he goes, real men drink peach schnapps. And it's peach schnapps. Yeah. That's it. It tasted so good. It tasted like candy. But they did a whole theatrical experiment on us worked. The whole bar was in on it. Everyone knew the prank to like local fucking Yankee assholes from New York. Come down here to the swamp. We'll show them. Awesome. And that was one of that weekend in New Orleans was my first time in New Orleans. I've now been back 3 times since. I'm obsessed with the place, all because Neil.
Every year now, yeah.
Yeah, it's the fucking best. And Neil turned me on to like all the coolest spots. I'm obsessed with going there.
Yeah.
And that's all because of Torco. Because where else? That's the other thing. You got to see the country. I've been to like 41 of the states.
At least from my experience, up into like Texas, north to Minnesota. I never really saw past that.
East of Mississippi.
Yeah. East of the Mississippi, because West Coast.
I've been to Kentucky, multiple places in Kentucky. I never would have been Tennessee.
Right, exactly.
Ohio, Indiana.
Yeah. I've been to 12 parts of Georgia that aren't even Atlanta. Yeah. And I've never been like.
Yep.
I got a fucking infected scrotal skin on a tour one time with Neil Casey. Was the same night of the Timeout Chicken. We drove from North Carolina to Georgia Tech the next day.
And we stopped at a gun range on the way.
We stopped at a gun range and shot guns in South Carolina, which was fucking awesome.
Yeah.
I got a dope-ass picture of Neil firing an M16, which is a... cool. Yeah. And we fucking... I got a scrotal infection. We had to go to Emory Hospital in Atlanta, which isn't like the heart of it there. Yeah. And it was like 1 a.m. and I was like, you guys don't have to come with me. And Neil and Greg came with me.
That's nice.
And I got, I had to take Vicodin and I had to get antibiotics. My scrotum was like twice the size of it normally is, which is small. it was up to almost medium sized at this point. And I remember telling the doctor, do you want me to give a message to your friends? I'm like, yes, yes. Tell them I'll be out in a little bit. They're the, she goes, and before I finish my sentence, she goes, the only white people in the waiting room? And I was like, yes, they're the only white people.
You should have been like, no.
I remember so many weird things because I was on Vicodin and we had been partying a little bit. They gave me a scrotal sonogram. Like I had to get a sonogram of my nuts to make sure nothing was going on inside. And I'm like, is it a boy? And the woman's like, go back. Like she would call, she got called in like a sonogram expert. She was like, go shut up. I'm fucking, it's fucking 2 a.m. I don't want to be here. Infected scrolls. Yeah, man. Thanks, Torco.
Oh, man. The one thing we didn't get to talk about is Theater 99 and Piccolo.
The annuals.
Yeah.
We should shout out. We should shout out Theater 99 in Big Charleston, time. South Carolina.
They're the best.
Should shout out
best
Brandy, Greg, all those fucking Sean, human beings. Sean, all the killers down at Theater 99. If you're in South Carolina near Charleston, check out Theater 99.
Yeah. You might not know you have this great improv theater.
You have this amazing improv theater.
And they routinely, they have great shows on their own. They have a great scene. They've got great improv on their own.
And a great theater experience.
Yeah.
Cheap beers. They know they keep it air conditioned. Yeah. They know what the audience wants.
And they
too.
Routinely bring the best shows from New York and some people from LA and stuff, and the and great stand ups on the road. You really can't beat it. Charleston is incredibly lucky to have them. It's really
Charleston
best.
Is behind New Orleans as like my second favorite city.
Yeah, but
in
they're
America.
Both these like old East Coast cities.
Yeah,
that
which
have this history. Yeah,
yeah. Charleston a little too much into the slavery history for me. Sometimes
I mean, New Orleans not a whole,
but New Orleans at least has like influences of other like it's not just
French.
Southern
sure,
Americana.
There's like,
there's like some French and Spanish and
cool.
Creole. Guys, thank you so much. Brandon Gardner, where can people tweet? Anyone who's listening to this that may have been at one of these Torcos, shout us out. At Brandon J. Gardner?
Yep, at Brandon J. Gardner.
And anything else, anything you want to plug here?
I'm now that I'm in LA, I'm doing the show called Improv Nerds with my friend Phil Jackson, which we did for years in New York. So if you're in LA, that's a good show to come check out.
What night is that usually?
The next one, I think, is April 2nd. I think it's a Monday night.
Okay, cool. And if it's if this episode comes out after that, keep your eye on the calendar
up,
for Improv Nerds.
Calendar,
or follow Brandon J. Gardner on Twitter for that. Neil Casey, follow you on Twitter and just read the fact that
at
you've
not
written,
Neil Casey.
At not Neil Twitter. Casey. Yeah. Only things you've ever tweeted are the phrase, fuck yourself, and stuff about the moon landing.
Is that right?
I haven't checked in a while.
Yeah, I think that's right. It was like
I'm pretty sure it's just fuck yourself.
Died. I forget if it was Bose who it was, but you would like that was the one time you would like. Here's an article on a great American.
Oh, I seem to recall that Neil Armstrong granted an interview to an Australian accounting firm.
Maybe
when
that's
he's
what
never
it was.
Granted an interview for a while, so I retweeted that.
Yes,
and then he died shortly thereafter. So
maybe
I
that's what. It
posted
that's the
a
only thing you've ever tweeted besides the phrase "fuck yourself."
And then I took a break for a year, and then I tweeted again that it had been a year since Neil Armstrong died.
Neil, what would you like to plug? Do you have anything you want to plug? I mean, people should check out Ghostbusters.
Yeah,
film
check out the movie Ghostbusters in July.
Yeah. I mean, it's not as much of a plug for Neil as like get out of your house and see a fucking amazing comedy made starring great women and written and directed by Paul Feig. Oh, written by Katie Dippold.
Yeah.
And directed by Paul Feig. And Neil is in that.
I'm in it, and
try not to miss the blockbuster of the summer.
Yeah.
The Smokes every Monday at UCB Franklin, man. The 30-something show for people who've been performing together for a long time. It's good. You're home by 9. You're going to have a great time.
You're at Bird's having a diet soda and a salad at 8:30, and you're home by 9. Neil Casey and Brandon Gardner, thank you so much. As always, I'm at John Gabris on Twitter. Give me 5 stars and roast me in the comments, and I could read your review on the show. And also check out our official Banshee episodes of this podcast that are coming out with me, the Shawns, and Ben as we interview Banshee cast members and recap Banshee season 4, the final season. All right, shitheads. Later. Bye, bye.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.